Rodgers almost going to fall for Martinez. Antonell trying to get there. Martinez finishes to give away the man.
It's an absolute peach from the Paraguayan Miguel Almirón.
Atlanta United, in just their second year of existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la...
Patrick Fowler, Patrick, I need help processing that.
I'm here to help.
What was it?
Oh, you're asking me right now.
Literally, yes.
Yeah. Honestly, I was actually pleased, like with the game, the way it went when I was watching. It was just, the result is a shame. I was interested to hear Gonzalo, I forget who it was, maybe it was you, who posted on Discord when we were doing our live blog last night, that Gonzalo went out to onto the field to kind of console Edwin Mosquera after he made his fateful pass. But you know, it's just one of those things where you did basically everything right, except you make one critical mistake and you have one of those kind of Nick De Leon moments where you can't really legislate for something like that, and it turns the result, you know. But it's still, you get at least a point out of it in a game where, frankly, I thought this team was going to lose going into it, just with the injury crisis that they were kind of going through right now.
Yeah, they did everything damn near perfectly for 90% of that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And it was genuinely impressive, honestly.
Absolutely.
That group of players.
Absolutely. You're going against a Philadelphia team who, mostly full strength, they were missing a center back. They were not starting Mikel Uribe, who eventually scored for some reason. It was a pretty much full strength side that was undefeated, that had completely bounced back from all of their CCC stuff at this point. And you outplayed them. You outplayed them. And then you didn't get the result you wanted because of two fluky things. And it's incredibly frustrating because for us, you don't know how to even really analyze. Like, yeah, obviously none of those mistakes were acceptable. You know, the throw in could have been defended better before, you know, you even have a chance for Kai Wagner to get that shot off, you know, but even still, incredible shot. I don't think he knows how he did it exactly, you know?
Yeah.
It is tough to process and analyze on a level of, like, how does this fit into the larger narrative of what Atlanta United is right now? Because I think it's a very good team. And giving up two late goals like that doesn't change that for me necessarily. It just kind of bums me out emotionally.
Yeah, I know. Same. And, it, like... Again, with Mosquera, it's like one of those things. Well, maybe that kind of pass is one of the reasons why he's not starting, you know, because he's kind of got that in his locker to kind of have an errant pass like that that really puts you in a bind. But he also did some positive things in the attack even after that goal. So it's not like a total loss, not that he's a terrible player or anything like that. It's just one of those things that happens, I think, over the course of a long season. It's a shame that it happened at home. It's a shame that it, you know, you drop points at home for the first time, but I think that Gonzalo Pineda and his staff, again, will be pleased with the performance that they saw. And I have to imagine even a lot of the players will be happy with the way that they played, especially when you look at the back line, which was a huge question mark to me. And I thought they played well. You know, there were so many areas of this team where you had major question marks going into it. And it's not like none of those question marks that we had were really what ended up costing you in the end. It was just kind of some random fluky stuff.
I don't think I have a bad thing to say about anyone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going through my brain trying to find some level of really deep, meaningful criticism. And it's not there. It's not.
Yeah.
Everyone was solid. Everyone did their job. Everyone executed on a game plan that I thought was effective. I mean, it was kind of not by the numbers way to attack a diamond, but it pretty much the general idea of how to attack a diamond, right? Like, they kind of vacated the central area of the pitch and lots of overloads and lots of trying to build down the wings. And, you know, we can get into that more a little bit later, but I thought everything was executed on, everything was effective, and then it wasn't. And I don't know where to go.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to underscore the fact that this team is playing with a striker who was not on the team like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and he scored. That, you know, you had, you know, Tyler Wolf starting. Again, we've talked about the center backs. Mm-hmm. He basically had nothing on the bench. Gonzalo Pineda only made two subs, probably because just the experience factor. And some other things I think we'll talk about a little bit later in the Q&A section. But maybe, like, I think maybe my only criticism of, like, a player in this game, outside of obviously the mistake that Mascara made, is, like, maybe Saba could be a little bit more clinical when he gets some moments. He rattled one off the post that could have put Atlanta back in the lead late in the game, you know. But those are – how much can you actually complain about finishing, because it's so fickle, you know, like sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. The best thing you can do is kind of do.
Hey, man, as a Liverpool fan, if I have to hear anyone talk about finishing one more time, I'm going to lose my mind. So I don't think that's where I want to steer the conversation.
None of the nuts and bolts of what you're trying to accomplish over the course of 90 minutes was really, you know, poor. You know, it like all that, all the key stuff that you need, the elemental stuff that you need to put together in order to create chances and win games was there. Atlanta had 19 shots in this game. That's exactly what you're looking for in a home game against a good team, by the way. Like you know, Philadelphia's a good team. Obviously, they had some issues as well with injuries and Andre Blake going out, which I think probably helped Atlanta with, you know, at least I think the Wiley goal was aided by the fact that Blake wasn't in there. But still, you know, it was a good finish and, gosh, it just stinks, you know. That's, you just feel like you let one slip through your fingers that would have been a nice couple added points to have at this stage.
I was thinking today just about where our thoughts and opinions would be if Atlanta had been able to get three deserved points in the last two games.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at a team with 15 points over seven games. They'd be right at the top of the Supporters Shield standings. They'd be on 2.1 or something points per game. Mm-hmm. And instead, we're all kind of a little bit low and sad because of a couple of moments where ball go in or ball don't go in.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels like caveman-y to simplify it that way, but it's kind of where we're at this early in the season with the data points.
Totally. Yeah. It's funny that you bring it up because I've been doing, you know, sports radio updates this morning, and you know, I've been, you know, had a little blurb in there on Atlanta United's result yesterday. And one of the things that I kind of leave it with is that, it, you know, it leaves Atlanta in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. And it almost feels like insincere for me to phrase it that way, to say it that way, because I feel like this team has played so much better over the course of the season than that would go to show. And obviously this early in the season when you're in sixth place, I mean, you're a point out of, you know, three spots above and three spots below. So it's all still so bunched up. But to your point, I mean, this team, you know, have a couple different things go their way and yeah, they're looking much differently. And I think that in general, people are thinking about them much differently if they're that high up the table at this point.
Yeah, even still, they're on 1.57 points per game mm-hmm. right now. You add that up over the course of a 34-game season, you're on 54 points.
Yeah.
Right? We're firmly in good soccer team territory. Just not elite soccer team territory there.
And a lot of that's been without Stian Gregersen, you know.
Mm-hmm. Without GT.
Yorgos Giakoumakis, you know, this team's already had to battle through some adversity, and they're just doing it so much better than I thought. I remember I mentioned in the live blog yesterday, it's like this team just seems so much more competent in being able to achieve this or pull off this kind of game model that Gonzalo Pineda wants to implement, where it didn't seem like they were able to do it as effectively last year, especially when things were going against them. It seemed like they kind of fell apart, and yeah.
Well, there's a clear answer to that, and I think we both kind of hit on it yesterday as well. The reason they're able to look so competent and look so effective with all these pieces missing is the fact that Bartek Sliss and Tristan Mwamba are not missing. Mm-hmm. They are there. Yep. They are there in midfield. They are making everyone else's job easier. They are covering ground. They are making a back line pairing that includes Noah Cobb and Luis Abraham feel a little more comfortable because they have people tracking back. They have people coming to help them. They have a good idea of what the positioning needs are for the situation, you know, and that showed through yesterday. I haven't looked at Bartek's distance covered yet, but I'm sure it's absurd.
Yeah,
he just gets everywhere all the time. And Tristan was phenomenal. I thought Tristan was going to be my man of the match. Probably was still the man of the match.
I thought he had his best game of the season yesterday.
Excellent. Just everywhere all at once, making tackles, winning duels, doing everything he needed to set this team up to get a result with a lineup that was, you know, in our 9+2 parlance, right, that we use the kind of framework we use to judge how full strength the lineup is. It was probably like, what, a 7-4?
It was, yeah, I counted it as a 7-4. I actually kind of, I it's funny that Andre Blake went out because at the beginning of the game, I was thinking, okay, this is a 7-4 lineup. It's really almost like a 6-4 if you're just to kind of discount the goalkeepers here, which I think puts it in better perspective as to what Atlanta is dealing with. But, you know, then Andre Blake goes out, so they're, you know, kind of screwed by having to go to their backup goalkeeper. So, but yeah, I mean, again, to repeat, it's like you feel like they did all they could in that game and they just made, you know, a critical mistake that cost them and got caught by, you know, one of those rare occurrences that happens in soccer. I thought, you know, as far as the central midfielders go, loved to see what Muyumba was bringing in the attack. Like, I think that he felt like there was a little bit more of an onus on him in that game to be, to get more forward into the box, to, you know, create some of that attacking presence because of what you're lacking without having your typical striker in there. And, you know, he's just really technical and intricate in those areas. It's, you know, he definitely has some of the Darlington Nagbe in him where it seems like he's like never going to score a goal. But I think that he's even more threatening though at goal than Nagbe ever was. Like Nagbe didn't even really get himself into a lot of those positions that Muyumba was finding himself in the box, which was exciting to see.
Yeah. We can look at that later and kind of compare the amount of touches Muyumba is getting in the penalty area compared to Nagbe. And I bet you're right. I bet he is consistently getting the ball into those positions more often. So it will come for him, I think. And he doesn't need to be anything special goal scoring wise, of course. Right. Just a few here and there would be excellent. I really thought he had it at the end of the game against Philadelphia. You know, I really thought he had it. But oh well, maybe it'll come soon. Maybe it'll come soon. Joe, just to come back real quick and keep kind of talking about where this team is at right now and why it's weird to feel kind of low after that. They are third in MLS and goals added right now.
Wow. Remember,
goals added is American Soccer Analysis is kind of all-encompassing metric. Essentially, it is assessing where you are getting the ball an attack, where you, what spaces you're getting the ball into and where you're keeping the ball from defensively, right? So think about it kind of in the same way as XG, but it's not as focused on chances at themselves, right? It's kind of field tilt and a mixture of chances and everything else that goes into it. It's a very, very simplified version of it. You guys can go look this up, but it is the most predictive metric we essentially have for MLS as far as future success goes. Not all of the metrics are really predictive at all, to be totally honest, even some of the times when we're talking about XG, but goals added, top of the list per an ASA study. Atlanta United's third. It's a good soccer team. I don't know what else to say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know how high up they've ever been. Like, you know, how good their goals added numbers have been. If they've ever eclipsed like third in MLS since that those stats have been in place, I don't think that they were. I don't think the stat had been developed to this point during the Tata Martino era. I'm not sure about that, but I don't recall seeing it. And yeah, I just can't recall Atlanta ever being that high up. So that it's a good indicator that they're doing things well. And it's good to see. I think, again, we kind of talked about this heading into the season, but in such an important year for Gonzalo Pineda and his team, and I know that there was some drama as relating to, I think Clement Diop said something about him being like an average manager or whatever, but I think that his managerial acumen is really showing this year. And now that, especially that he finally has a solid midfield to work with, which I don't think he ever had previously, and I don't think you can properly really judge a manager when you don't have the kind of personnel that you need. I think that the signs are really good so far, despite the fact that the results could be better, and this team, you know, perhaps should be higher up the table than they are.
Well, I mean, even Garth said it before the year. He said, "Gonzalo, we owe you a team."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that was so true in so many ways. And now they have it, and now we're seeing a lot of the signs that this is coming good. So I don't know. I thought it was weird to see. I saw someone, in the Discord saying that the loss or the draw was on Pineda, and that felt extremely silly to me.
Yeah,
you know, for a number of reasons, which you don't really have to get into. But Joe, you kind of mentioned at the start, it was interesting to see Gonzalo Pineda after the match after the final whistle, I thought he was heading towards the referees, and he very well might have been,
as he tends to do. Yeah.
But Philadelphia had that on lock. Philadelphia had first dibs. They had surrounded the referee, and we can talk about why at a little bit, but he kind of redirected course, or maybe it was always his intention to go find Edwin, who was just sitting on the ground at the final whistle, and he pulled him up and then clearly said something to him. And I'm curious to find out maybe what was said. They usually don't share with us exactly what they're saying on the field, but it was an interesting moment to kind of watch him go and pick up this kid who, you know, basically just had one of the worst moments of his professional career. Right. Yeah. We can talk about that pass real quick. I don't understand what the process was in his head. I just don't. But the bummer about it, though, and Gonzalo pointed this out as well, is that he pressed extremely hard to get to that point. He had to bust his ass to make the worst mistake of his career. And sports are a hell of a thing sometimes, man. It was brutal. Yeah. It was.
If I had to guess as regards to the pass, I think he was just trying to do a simple back pass to Gazan, but I think that he just got too much kind of spin on it. Like he kind of spun it almost like it was a cross, you know, and it just kind of spun out to the left and got to the point where Gazan couldn't go chase it. And that's what happened. And so he just needs a little bit better technique, a little bit more focus maybe when he's making that pass.
Sure.
Cause it's easy. He's like, oh, it's a back pass. We're just going to hit it. So, yeah, you just got to take a little bit more care. But that's tough for him. But, again, I think I thought he still showed something in his primary role for the team, which is to, you know, attack. And, yeah, it's just a shame. I forget, was Atlanta 2-0 up when he came on? I guess they were.
Yeah, they were about to sub him on right before the second goal, and then he came on.
Okay.
A tough one for him, a tough one for the refs. But before we get into that, I do want to mention that Kurt Castle is on the intro to our podcast that happened 16 minutes ago. Thank you, Kurt. The song is Chances. You can check out Kurt's music wherever you find music. You can also check out our partners over at Lucid FC if you're looking for some of the best streetwear around, lucidfc.us. They've got shirts, they've got pants, they've got everything you could ever want to look much, much cooler than your friends, lucidfc.us. Joe Patrick, we have a website too. It's called 5StripeFinal.com. You can check out extra podcasts there, extra articles, all the coverage you really need to be an extremely informed Atlanta United fan. We even have stuff breaking down MLS roster rules on the website. And we might try to do a little bit of that here at the end of the show. But for now, Joe Patrick, I think we do need to talk about the refs in this one, because it has become such a point of contention, not only within Atlanta United internet, but I've seen national folks talking about this as well. And from the Atlanta United side, Atlanta fans have been focused, and some Atlanta media have been focused, on a throw-in violation that potentially maybe happened within the second goal Philadelphia scored, right? The throw-in comes into the box. It's headed away to the top of the box. Kai Wagner is sitting there and kind of skips it off the ground and sends it into the side netting. I don't even really know how he did it. Neither does he. Joe, I don't care is my take.
Yeah. That's I'm the same. My take.
Look, real quick, just to clarify, the rule is, as long as some part of your foot is touching the touchline, you can make that throw. Okay.
It doesn't have to be behind it. So both feet either on or behind. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have to be behind it all the way. You can be touching it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it looks like his heel is on the line when he makes that throw. And even if it's not, it is by an infinitesimally small amount that we cannot make out from the pixels on the screen. Right.
Yep.
And even if he was over, that did not contribute to the goal itself in any meaningful way.
Right.
Joe, in fact, Joe Patrick, Philadelphia has a much larger set of grievances with the referee than Atlanta United does after this game.
Yeah. Oh, man. So this gets me to something that irritates me in sports. And it's irritated me in soccer because it's definitely trended to go. It's been trending toward this overly complicated like review system and all this. And to me, one of the beauties of soccer, and again, some people might not probably totally disagree with me on this. In fact, I definitely know there are people. I've had debates with them. But something I always loved about soccer when I first got into it was just like whatever happened was final. Like, you know, and there were definitely mistakes that were made. Some egregious ones. I remember, like, as a Tottenham fan, and this is, again, I'm talking about the pre-VAR era. Tottenham was definitely the recipient of some terrible calls. I'll never forget one where Kyle Walker was like 3 yards offside, but maybe he was like so offside that the ref just didn't see it, and then they scored off that and beat Manchester City. They were also screwed by bad calls too, but I always kind of appreciated this kind of like this imperfect beauty of just like this realism of whatever, you know, it was up to the ref, and whatever the refs decided, that's the way it went, and you know, it was on them to make the proper calls. And I just kind of use that to, as a pretext for the debate being had over this throw-in, which was, I don't want to see the game come down to, like, you know, the game being, like, everything is looked at, you know, everything is, like, judged retroactively, and everything is as kind of not happening in real time because the ref can always go back to find some infraction that happened beforehand that could nullify it. You know, I just hate that in my sports, and I understand the reason why. Don't get me wrong. Like, I like, the game is definitely better, like, more fair, I think, with VAR. Like, you, like, more calls are technically correct, but I think that you just, when you gain like justice in that sense, in like how a sport is refereed, I think you just do lose a little bit of, you know, this kind of magical sense of it, and that a magical sense that I think we all love at some level deep on the inside. And I would just, you just got to think about it from the other perspective. Like, you would just hate if your team scored a goal and then it comes back on, you know, a throw, an illegal throw that is judged after the fact that, again, to your point, didn't even directly relate to the kicking of the ball and even Atlanta's defense of it. You know, it was just like they were defending like they would always would.
Yeah, no, it reminded me on some level of what happened this week with Arsenal and Bayern in the Champions League, right? Where they had the handball that wasn't on the kind of like fluky mistake, like, I don't know what's actually happening, error that an Arsenal player made where they basically just reached down and touched the ball where no one was near him. And I saw folks crying out for a penalty on that.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you know, I think the referees made the right call in interpreting the game there and saying, okay, this was clearly not something that gave anyone an advantage in any way.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So why do this extremely harsh penalty that really probably shouldn't even exist anyway, if you're a penalty truther like I am? You know, there are a lot of things that go into that. And with this one, especially with just a minor error, like this throw-in violation, it just wasn't a big deal to me. Now, if you're a Philadelphia fan, what might be a big deal to you is that it sure seemed like they had a third goal, and on further review of the angles that we were shown, it sure looked like he was onside.
Yeah.
It is very, very close at the very least. Then on top of that, you have the end of the game where Philadelphia is in the final third. They are on the edge of the 18-yard box. It is like 96:05 on the clock after 6 minutes of stoppage time were added, and the ref blows the whistle because there's like a light back pass to the top of the 18.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. I actually didn't even know that because when I was in the live blog, I saw the score go final on my phone, and I was watching it on my computer. I had the game going on my computer. So like, as soon as I saw the game go final, I was like, ah, like there was like 30 seconds left or whatever in the game. I didn't even watch it. So I didn't even see that. That's wild.
It was pretty atrocious. We did get a great quote from Jen Curtin out of this though.
Nice.
Essentially, I mean, I can find it right quick, but he says, what does clear and obvious even mean? What's clear and obvious to me might not be to the next human. Millions of people watch 2.5 Men, and I think it's the dumbest show ever. It's clear and obvious to me that it's terrible.
Yes.
So at least we got that.
Right.
I don't know. Like, y'all can complain about throw in or what the fuck ever. We got that quote out of it, so we consider it a win. Right.
I wish he would have said the Big Bang Theory. I feel like that's even more appropriate, but it, yes, very much along similar lines. 2.5 Men, Big Bang Theory. Yeah. My parents love like Big Bang Theory, and they just laugh at jokes where I'm just not laughing. Just don't find it funny. But yeah, no, it's...
the duality of man. Jeff.
How many times have we heard the "what is clear and obvious" rant from coaches? That just made me laugh.
No,
but
Amy's
got a legitimate gripe for sure. Well, I mean, I would be pretty frustrated if I were him and you got called on an offside there.
We say all that to just kind of reshape maybe some narratives going around and just to focus people here on the fact that the soccer is just soccer sometimes. Yeah. And sometimes you give up two random fluky goals and, you know, maybe it's not the end of the world if the ref misses one little thing by a tiny amount. I don't know.
Right. It's like similar to just like the way a ball bounces, like your way or not. Sometimes the calls that are on those fine margins go your way. Sometimes they don't. And you just have to live with that. That's just the way that it goes.
Yeah. All you can really do is set yourself up to have the most positive results in the most repeatable way. Right. And you do that by playing well, and you do that by creating chances. And Atlanta United did that not extremely effectively, but effectively enough in this game. And Joe, I kind of want to talk about how they did it. Mm-hmm. In some ways.
Yeah.
And I think they really found control of the game by kind of neutralizing Jose Martinez on some level. Remember, Jose Martinez is Philadelphia's very, very talented number six, also very, very annoying number six. Atlanta fans hate them. Some Jose Martinez, from my understanding. I love him dearly, but that's just my own personal bias.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He essentially got put on an island by himself at times, especially as Atlanta kind of built through midfield and got to the final third, because Thiago Almada had spaced himself in a way that essentially created a line of four up top for Atlanta United, right? You had Daniel Rios as the striker, and then you had the two wingers. Sometimes it was Brooks getting forward, right? But Almada was essentially playing in this line of four and kind of separating Philadelphia's diamond in a way that forced Jose Martinez to drop pretty deep, right? And essentially have to join up with the center backs and be in this area where he really didn't have a ton of effect on the game, especially for the first like 30 or so minutes, right? And what that did is forced Atlanta United and forced Philadelphia really to kind of deal with a whole bunch of overloads, right? They really kind of angled things towards the wings. They really kind of avoided the central area, the pitch. Like, I took a few pictures and you can just see like this big gap of people, right? And Jose Martinez kind of looking around wondering where everyone is throughout the entire game. And it was kind of fascinating to watch. It's, again, it's pretty typical for how you want to go after a diamond. You want to go down the wings. You want to work through where people aren't. And Atlanta and I did a really effective job of that, I thought. They did a nice job, and then they started throwing wrinkles into it. You know, Thiago Almada was able to start adjusting to the adjustments that Philadelphia were making, and when he started dropping deeper, Jose Martinez had to kind of change his positioning, and Thiago Almada was able to get on the ball into space, and I think you can see part of that in the first goal, right, where he gets into space in the final third and is able to be in that central area and creating in a way they weren't really expecting, right? So... again, overall, A+ to everyone. A+ to Noah Cobb and Luis Abram for having a great game, I thought. A+ to all involved, except for two bad moments.
Yeah. I thought it was a great tactical wrinkle by Gonzalo Pineda to have Thiago Almada doing that. I'm going to joke that, you know, it's almost like it's part of its self-preservation. Just like, don't let Jose Martinez be on your back. Like when you're receiving the ball, because he's going to come in on you. And we're already down enough players, so we can't afford to lose Thiago because of a hard challenge. But I think it's smart because of the way that it kind of disorganized Philadelphia a little bit. But I'm sure the instruction was something along the lines of like, just play behind Jose Martinez, like be behind him, make him drop. If he wants to be like having eyes on you, make him like drop essentially into the back line in order to do that. Because that's going to disorganize, I think, a lot of what Philadelphia does with their shape, because, you know, we call it a 4-4-2 diamond, which it is, but like, really, it's a lot of man marking in certain situations, and there's like a pattern of how they go and pick up players that come into certain areas. And if Thiago's dragging Jose Martinez into an area where he's then more ineffective and able to pick up some of those players, some of those marks that he's supposed to, it just disorganizes Philadelphia a little bit and doesn't allow them to execute the way that I'm sure Jim Curtin would want. And then the other thing that it did I mean, they were still, you know, trying to pull that off, and there were some really nice switches that Atlanta United hit. Noah Cobb hit one in particular that I thought was really smart, because they were trying to do this build-up where they were working up the right side, and I've actually thought Atlanta was executing it well. It was just two teams that were executing well, where Atlanta was trying to hit this very precise, like kind of almost one or two touch passage of play up the right side. Philadelphia had guys on their backs, basically. And so even though Atlanta was executing that relatively well, just it's just hard to, when you're defended well, that's kind of going to win out. And there was one moment in particular where they had tried it a couple times. It was decent, but didn't work. And then Noah decides, instead of initiating that movement again, once again, up that right side, he just kind of almost feints it and then hits a big switch. I can't remember who the switch landed to, but they were just in tons of space on that left side, and then were able to progress the ball very easily up into the final third and start, you know, a goal scoring kind of opportunity there. So, yeah, it was good. I'm glad you pointed that out, because it's something that wasn't as noticeable for me watching at home. But then once you did point it out, then it was more like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing now. And again, that's just something you pick up from the view from the pole, you know. No, I'm just kidding. But it is something that you pick up when you're actually physically at games, mm-hmm. that you just can't as easily notice when you're watching on TV.
It was funny too, as well. At one point in the first half, they showed on the Halo board the areas in which Atlanta United were entering the final third. Right, they kind of split the field into thirds, left, middle, right, third, vertically, and Atlanta had gone through that middle third about 17% of the time, I think. Everything else is down the flanks. Again, it changed a bit as Atlanta adjusted to the adjustments Philadelphia were making, but still, it was a solid game plan from the jump. And, you know, you can let Thiago be kind of up top and almost as a second striker when you have midfielders as good as Bartek and Tristan. And it's worth repeating that over and over again, how much they made things easier for Atlanta yesterday in so many ways.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Do you have anything you wanted to add on Cobb and Abraham? Because I just thought they were really good. And I love, there was one where Cobb went up for a header and just like clearly like missed it. But I almost feel like, not that his intention was to miss it, but I feel like he just wanted to like impose his physicality. And I thought that he did that maybe more than he has in a game yet so far this year. And he just felt, it felt to me like there was a different kind of attitude from him. Like, okay, like I'm not like, it's me and Louise, you know, we're kind of reserve guys. Screw this. Yeah, you know, like we're starters. And I just thought it was great to see. I thought it was a huge step forward for Noah in particular to be able to, you know, deal with that situation.
Yeah, the whole team was up for the physical nature of the game, but Noah did have a few moments where he went, okay, yeah, he's more than up for the fight. In this case, there was a moment particular, we have a question about it later actually, where he gets into the back of Julian Carranza in midair and really just shoulders him to the ground.
Yeah,
essentially.
I think that's what, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
He was going for it. Was going for it. And you mentioned them when you were talking about them being reserved, my brain didn't process it as like, oh, they're the backups. It processes like, oh yeah, they are pretty quiet guys. And that was kind of my concern going into the game was, mm-hmm. are they going to be aggressive enough in a game where you are required to beat players to the ball in space, or you're required to be physical when you're going up against two strikers and a team that plays very direct. And both of them were fully up for the challenge yesterday. Full credit to them. They did a nice job playing out of the back as well. We have to give a special shout out to Headband Luis, who seems to be an entirely different person when he's on the field. It's the headband, man. It's got some magic in it. They were solid. They did everything they needed to do. And it was curious to me. I got to disagree. If anyone read Matt's column for MLS today, he kind of mentioned that Atlanta were in the same vein as the Galaxy, as a dynamic attacking team who has too many defensive flaws to be elite. And I'm balked at that because I think Atlanta's been very solid defensively, especially considering the injuries they've had to their back line. You don't see them giving up the same kind of goofy set piece goals that the Galaxy have, right? You don't see them giving up nearly as many chances. And honestly, they've been, you know, they've essentially been mid-level as far as underlying numbers go for chances allowed, but considering the absences they've had, they've been more than good enough defensively for me to be a contender.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I don't expect Atlanta United to be like the best defensive team because they invest so much in the attack, and they are legitimately, I think, one of the best, better attacking teams in MLS. So really only need what you're looking for defensively is to be, you know, average to above average. I think that's, they've been above average, I would say. Like, they haven't even conceded that many goals this year. And the ones that they have, again, there's been like some varying circumstances around those things. So, yeah, I would agree with that. And I should just also add, while we're talking about the defenders, because I was just kind of talking about Noah Cobb, basically, should give, yeah, Luis Abram a shout out. I thought he had his best game maybe ever that I've seen him play for Atlanta United.
Sure, yeah.
There were a couple times where he put himself into a challenge, and I was like, who is that? it doesn't seem like an aggressive kind of play that he would make on a ball, but credit to him as well. And we just don't really talk about him as much, I think, because Noah is more of an interesting story just because he's homegrown and maybe has a longer kind of has the potential to have a longer tenure with Atlanta United than I think Abram probably has. But you need players like Abram to step up sometimes in these situations, and he definitely did that. Again, they gave up two goals, which is tied for a season high for this team, but it's really undeserving. Those center backs had nothing to do, basically, with the two goals that were scored. Like, there was nothing that anybody really could have done, honestly, about some of those goals. I don't know if we said this. The Wagner's goal on FotMob, it was registered as a 0.11 XG. I cannot imagine it was actually that high. I feel like usually those kinds of goals are like 0.04s. That's like a common goal XG you'll see from that, where that goal was taken. And the post shot XG was like 0.6, which is crazy high. You know, that's just like not a lot you can do about that.
Sir Patrick, there is something we can do about the next segment of our show, and I want to put this to you. You're going to be the grand arbiter here.
Okay.
We can move to fivestrikefinal.com to discuss the MLS roster rules changes on the way, mm-hmm. or we can give the folks on the main show a special treat and let them listen to the MLS roster rules stuff. What do we think?
Let's give them a treat.
Okay. Earlier last week, The Athletic's Paul Tenorio reported on a number of roster rules changes set to be implemented in MLS this summer. Yes, this summer, Joe Patrick, because what are rules? What is time? What is MLS? It's all just made up as it goes along. Anyway, because MLS is just secretly Calvin Ball.
I was just going to say, it's like Calvin Ball just like having a meeting where he's making up the new rules for the game. Yeah.
always and forever. It's why we love it, right? These changes could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They could be really interesting. To kind of go over the biggest one real quick as best I can. Everyone hang tight. Does everyone have their helmet on? Remember to attach your helmets before attaching your child's helmet if they are in the car listening to this with you. We're going to do some real in-depth roster rules breakdown stuff here, right? So remember, teams have designated player spots. Teams have U22 spots. All of those players have a diminished cap hit for what they actually make, right? You can pay a designated player whatever you want. They only count it's $683,750 against the cap, right? You can play a U22 player a certain amount up to a point as far as salary goes, but you don't have to factor in transfer fee, right? So you could pay a $50 million transfer fee for a player under 22 years old to come into your team as long as their salary is below a certain threshold, which is, again, $683,750. They are only going to count $200,000 against your cap, okay? Mm-hmm. So these players are valuable because they do not take on the same amount of cap hit as a standard player. Everyone got it? Cool. Right now, the amount of U22 players that you can have on your roster is tied directly to how many designated players you have. Okay. So if you have three full or senior designated players, okay, players who cannot be bought down, players who are not tamable, if you want to call it that. If you have three of those players who are above that level, you can only have one U22.
Okay.
However, if you do not have three of those senior / full designated players, you can have all three of your U22 slots, right? So right now, Atlanta United has two players who are essentially full DPs for the sake of simplicity, right? And Steon Gregerson is not required to be a DP. He just is a DP because he earns the highest cap hit, right? So Atlanta went ahead and made him a DP just to reduce his cap hit.
It's the biggest discount you get, basically.
But he doesn't have to be a DP.
Right.
He just is one, okay? Yurgos, Thiago, have to be, okay? So Atlanta has their three U22 slots. Obviously, they only have one U22 because of the whole... some issues, right? but Santa Casosa, Franco Abar, the other U22s, they're out all known. Edwin Mosquera is the other. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone got that. Are we there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The change that is coming is that those slots will no longer be essentially tied to each other in the same way.
Okay.
Okay. If you have three full DPs, you will be allowed to have three U22s regardless. Okay, so you're essentially adding U22 spots. However, Joe Patrick, and here's where it gets weird, okay, and complicated, and what a great way to grow the sport by making it completely impossible to explain to anyone with a rational brain. If you have two full DPs,
okay,
two players that are designated players, that have to be designated players, you can have four U22 spots, and Joe Patrick, you get $2 million worth of GAM.
Okay.
So you see the conundrum here for roster builders, right? Do you take the extra DP and just have the three U22s, or do you add a U22 and get the extra GAM? I'm not going to explain what GAM is. Just think about like having monopoly money to spend on players within MLS and to lessen the cap it for players on your roster. That's all GAM is. Don't overthink it. Okay.
So basically they're, So basically what they're doing is they're giving teams an option of how they build their teams out. It's like either you go with the three designated players, which is the three highly paid star players, more of like the stars and scrubs approach. It's like a fantasy football thing or like a fantasy sports thing, but it's like, you know, you have these more high paid players and then less to work with on your roster, or you do less of the super high paid players and then MLS is basically incentivizing that by then allowing you to build out the rest of your roster deeper with the added allocation money. So that's kind of seems to be what MLS is to try to, I think, even the playing field for some of these teams who don't have the financial resources to, you know, go out and spend $20 million on a Thiago Amada or whoever.
If only there were some way to make this so much simpler. If only we hadn't suggested 15 different ideas before getting to this one. Okay, well, here's what this means, potentially, for Atlanta United, and this is where I really, really need everyone to stay with me here, okay? Mm-hmm. Because it's really exciting if I'm right and if this works out the way I think it's going to work out, okay? So obviously Atlanta has some options here, and we know that Garth is U22 apprehensive on some level, right? Because by nature, U22s are younger, less proven players with less data points who are more of a risk. They're more of a risk objectively.
More even with the much higher bust potential. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we certainly know that here in Atlanta.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But what Atlanta United can do here, potentially, right, is they can essentially remove the DP tag from Steon Gregerson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because he doesn't have to be a DP. And it doesn't really matter if it's a young DP or whatever else right now. So Thiago and Yurgos would be the two DPs. Okay. They could take that $2 million in GAM and put it towards lessening Steon's cap hit, right? So they don't go over salary, right? Over salary budget, over cap hit, whatever. And they can add one more U22, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would give them four, even though two of them aren't with the team. And they can take some of that extra GAM and put that towards another player signing. Right. So and what helps with that is that they're adding a second buyout, Joe Patrick, which we can talk about in a second. But
oh, interesting. In That's theory, really interesting.
You could have that buyout. You could take all that extra GAM and you could add a U22 and a probably a relatively high level player potentially. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Is the second buyout, is that just a one-time second buyout that would allow teams to potentially take this 2DP approach, or is it two buyouts every year going forward?
Two buyouts every year going forward. Wow. Big change, right?
Yeah. That's great because it gives teams so much more flexibility. Because one of the problems in MLS is if you do, buy a lemon for then it becomes really hard to get that player off of your roster to allow you to rebuild and be competitive again. So really like that move. And from a player's perspective, it's like they're getting paid out. So they're earning their money too. They're not getting screwed.
I do get a note real quick that while every team is getting that second buyout this year, since these rules are potentially being implemented halfway through the year, they still have to be ratified, right? Since these rules are potentially being implemented halfway through the year, teams aren't going to get the full 2 million in game. It'd only be the 1 million.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
So that would be enough to lessen Gregerson's cap it down to that DP level.
Right.
Or the pre-DP level. The DP level, right?
Right.
But with the buyout as well, it would be enough to potentially bring in a player like at least, somewhere near TAM, I think.
So
potentially, if they want to do it.
The question I was going to ask you, and I don't know if you know this, I kind of doubt you do, but like, what is the order of operations for receiving the money? Like, do you have to, because I would imagine like Atlanta United cannot just say, okay, we're going to unregister Steon as a DP, because then they would be over the cap. The reason why Steon's a DP is because it allows the puzzle to kind of come together under and allows them to come in under the cap, under their salary budget. So I would imagine that you would have to kind of like have your team registered in order, and then you receive the money. Is there an understanding that teams would be receiving allocation money, some of this allocation money bonus this summer?
Yes.
Okay.
The 1 million for this summer, right?
Interesting. And I wonder if that's based off of teams' current like registration statuses, because it seemed gameable to me. Like you could, like you could just kind of like almost temporarily have your roster set up in a certain way so that you get the money, and then once you get the money, you can like sign more players and readjust things.
So you're hitting at it. You're hitting at it. Okay, yeah. So here's the big thing for Atlanta United. Okay. besides everything else I've already said.
Sam's getting excited now.
What's fun about this is that you do not have to stick to that next year, right? You just hit on it. Okay. Mm. In theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, none of this is ratified yet. But because Joe Patrick, Franco Ibarra, and Santiago Sosa's contract expire after this season, right? You can take stock of your roster after this year and reassess how you want to approach it, because you'd only have the two DP or the two U22s.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So next year, if you wanted to just go the 3DP, 3U22 route, you totally could. But for this year, you can absolutely add those players in. We talked about it. Essentially, we're talking about two players, right? And maintain your roster flexibility at the same time.
Hmm.
And that's a heck of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It would definitely give them, that would open up a lot more avenues for them to, because like they've been pretty strict in terms of what they can do roster wise, and part of that is by their own kind of principles that I think has been established by Garth. But prior to him coming in, I mean, they were restricted because of their own moves that they had made. And so, yeah, this would be quite the opportunity. I have a feeling that this is not going to pass as it stands. I feel like there's going to be teams that have issues with the way that it's currently set up. Not that it won't happen, but I feel like there could be some tweaks, perhaps related to how you have to kind of have your team set up in order to receive money by like certain time points, like by certain points in time. I just say that because it definitely feels like a rule change that would massively benefit a team in Atlanta United's circumstance.
Especially inner Miami circumstances. But the big thing here I do want to note is that this has per Paul, this has been voted on by the, essentially the Board of Governors.
Okay.
Right? So all that has to happen now, for the most part, is that the MLSPA has to approve it. And it seems likely okay. that would happen.
Interesting. Interesting.
At this point.
So the teams are basically for it.
It seems like it at this point.
Yeah.
It seems like it. So this appears to be happening. We don't know 100%, but this appears to be happening. And, you know, it seems like Atlanta United, maybe intentionally, maybe unintentionally, I am very curious to know how much they knew about what might be coming down the pipe, or if this is just a product of good roster building and having the roster flexibility built in. But it seems to be set up really well to benefit off these. If I'm right, I can't say for the thing is, we just never know how much allocation money a team has. We don't know exactly how close a team is to being over the salary cap. We know Atlanta United is close to being right at the edge of their salary cap. But with these rules put into place, they can rearrange and they can mix and match, and they could add in some needed depth pieces for this season that could potentially be long term pieces as well.
Yeah, and if that all sounded super confusing, Sam has actually written this stuff out on the website, fivestripefinal.com, so you can read through it and reread through it and maybe read through it again a third time because it is a little bit, you know, it's a lot to kind of take in, as if MLS roster rules weren't already a lot to take in already. But I'm excited about this. This could really, frankly, could help Atlanta United, but I think it's generally a positive move for the direction of the league.
Now, Joe, I do want to get back to the second buyout. Real quick.
Yeah.
Because especially after this weekend, there unfortunately seems to be a relatively obvious answer as to who that might be. And it seems like considering that Derek Etienne just hasn't panned out and, you know, probably wants to be in a situation himself where he is getting more minutes and can get back on track. Yeah. That seems to be a likely scenario potentially during the summer. It's just something to keep an eye on. Again, I'm not happy about that. Trust me. but it seems to be where you would kind of set your sights if you were going to use that second buyout this year. Maybe they're okay with the depth right now, but he is taking up a TAM level cap hit. And, you know, if Luis Abram is going to come in and be an effective fourth center back like he was this week, then, you know, you would choose one over the other, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that would be a massive cap relief for Atlanta United. And I'm kind of surprised that I would think that MLS would have attached some sort of penalty to teams. If you want to do the second buyout, then it's going to cost you, you know, like kind of like the NFL does it. And this is all like in the NFL, it's related to like guaranteed money versus like non-guaranteed because it gets a little complicated in the actual contract itself. But like teams are penalized if they want to cut players, you're then penalized against the cap a certain amount for cutting those players. And again, it's based off of what's in the contract. But I'm a little bit surprised MLS didn't add some sort of financial penalty. But having said that, I mean, I guess one of the reasons why they wouldn't add the financial penalties is because they want teams to be able to get better quickly. I think they want teams to be able to rebound quicker because they need fans to be interested even if a team is in last place. Because when that happens in MLS, sometimes it often takes years for that to turn around. And by that time, I think from a marketing standpoint, you've kind of lost momentum with your fan base and everything. So, I guess it makes sense, but as much sense as it can possibly make at this point in time. Something that you mentioned there about the Board and Governors, by the way, this is a totally different topic. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, I think I'm done.
A little bit of a news item that hit, and I'm going to try to dig into this more this week and see if I can find out anything else and potentially write about it. But, Joshua Blank is Arthur Blank's son, and he apparently is Atlanta United's representative on the MLS Board of Governors. He was in attendance at the aforementioned meeting while the groundbreaking was happening in Fayetteville last week. And, you know, it sounded to me like, from my understanding, he's essentially operating as Atlanta United's owner under Arthur Blank, basically, but his son Joshua, and you know, this is probably smart for Arthur Blank as a, you know, to create a succession plan because Arthur is in the later stages of his life. Not to get morbid about it, but you will need somebody to kind of take over that business role. And so probably good that he's getting the experience, and I'm sure he's, you know, competent and everything. So we'll see. I want to learn more about this just to know, understand better kind of what he's actually, what his roles and responsibilities are as it relates to Atlanta United. I'm sure it's very hands-off and that it's only just kind of attending some of these high-level meetings and things like that and representing Atlanta United, but I'm curious to learn more, and as I do, I'll try to share it with everybody, all of our subscribers on Five Stripe Final.
Yeah, before anyone like freaks out, I do want to add too that Josh played soccer.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the reason Atlanta United exists in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
He played at Elon and has soccer experience and a soccer background. I don't know what that means for his involvement with the team necessarily going forward on a hands-on level, but does have a soccer background, does, you know, have that experience. And so I'd be curious to see. You've heard rumors, if you've been around Atlanta media, about the kind of succession planning that Arthur has been doing, you know, and it's interesting to see that kind of start to come to fruition. So maybe not early, but right now
we're
watching it,
you
know?
Yep.
Interesting to see. Joe Patrick, anything else to add before we move on to some questions?
No, let's do that right now. I'm glad our freebies got almost a full hour of solid five-strike final.
Just like the
and
old
if you
days.
Want more, if you want to go the full 90, I don't know if we'll actually go 90, but head on over to 5stripefinal.com, sign up.
All right, Joe Patrick, first question. Cursive Kid says, missed the game. How was Saba on the left?
Fine. I actually liked him on the left.